and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. I'm Darren Hefty, along with agronomist Rob Fritz. We're going to be talking about manure management, and right off the bat, you start thinking about, manure smell. Well, we want to try and eliminate that as much as we can and keep all of that underneath the soil, if at all possible. We'll get into some strategies on today's program. Also be taking your questions via email today, radio@agphd.com, or you can find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, or Darren Hefty. Rob, manure management. We attempted to put a bunch of manure on our farm this fall, but the weather just didn't cooperate, as happened for many farmers across the region. We just didn't get all the manure used up that we were hoping to.
Yeah, it was an unfortunate event for, I think, everybody involved. You know, we did manage to get a few fields spread. So on the positive side, we're going to have some nice testing to see what happens if it would work the way it was supposed to. Manure applied, worked in within just a few hours. So that part we have going for us, we have a few fields where it actually did it the way we wanted to. We've also got some compost out, which real flexible stuff. And, you know, we could put that on at any time. In fact, our plan is to go this winter and finish that project on some of the fields, which with compost being so stable, if we have any kind of a decent winter, we can go out there and hammer that out. So we're obviously excited about that. And, you know, we're big proponents, or I am a big proponent of what the manure can bring for us. So we definitely want to do what we can to get it into the rotation.
All right, you opened the door there, Rob, and you said we took some compost instead of manure for some acres. Can you talk about what are some of the differences with compost versus manure?
Well, the basic difference, the way I look at it, and I'm sure there's some definition somewhere in a book that I should have paid attention to when I was in college, but I wasn't. Basically, the way I look at it is, you know, the stability. And once we go through a biological process, you have a couple ways of going about it. Historically, it's been oxygenating the manure, allowing the microbes that are oxygen-based to go in there and take that manure and take it from its highly available but unstable form, and working through the process where all the biologicals can break down the organic matters and everything else in that manure, especially now I'm talking dry manure, cattle manure specifically, then we're going to put that into a stable form where most of the nitrogen is in a form that is organic, or almost all of it, and the manure is, you know, for all extensive purposes, 100% stable, so that it doesn't have volatility issues, and you can apply it, you know, at any time. The smell is gone. It's a really nice, a lot of the water's out of it, so it's a really nice product to handle and to spread.
You know, when we think about the nutrient availability, it's a little slower in the compost, which in some, well, like you talk about with the application, that actually is probably a good thing. And then you think about if you are a livestock producer and you've got more livestock than you have acres, this is an option for you too, to compost the manure and kind of delay some of that release of nutrients for your crop.
Well, what I like about it, you know, there's a lot of organics being applied to the soil now. So you take that and look at the pounds of organic matter applied, which that's a big deal as far as, you know, just the general health of the soil. And then obviously the microbes that we built up in this system are very beneficial to the soil. So we have a lot of positives going in. You know, one of the big ones that people talk about more than anything is they like compost because of the smell profile is gone. You know, your ammonia smell is gone, and any strong sulfate smell is gone because that's already been converted. So that's one of the big advantages we have here, being very close to Sioux Falls. The compost can be hauled in and spread, and, you know, nobody's offended. Obviously, it's good for our soil, so it's a win-win-win.
You know, we talk about what's good for the soils here, and we get a lot of soil samples in. So often we see, just kind of across the board, we're low in fertility, especially on rented ground or just ground where it hasn't been kept up with. And manure is such a great option for guys who need a little bit of everything. Not that manure is perfectly balanced for every soil situation, but can you think of a way, Rob, to build fertility faster than putting on manure?
Well, and I think you're right about that. You said manure and you didn't say compost. You know, if I'm going into a piece and it's been not maybe fertilized adequately or, you know, taken care of the way we would normally with high fertilizer additions, I mean, the manure is readily available. It's ready to go. It's looking for something to do. And, you know, whereas the compost, if we convert it to that, it's a little more stable and the breakdown is a longer profile. So yeah, I agree. The manure is the way to go. There's no faster way to turn soil into highly productive than, you know, the manure compost combination. You know, a lot of guys look at that as a liquid side. You know, a lot of, you know, the poultry manure comes in there and hog manure, which is high dosage. So you can really move things quickly. Maybe less organic matter, but a higher dosage of NPK.
Yeah, it's definitely something to pay attention to. I remember when we were kids, it was a matter of cleaning out pens and getting manure ready. So my dad would spread it out in the field when I was just really getting started managing livestock. And we were just happy to get rid of it. At that point, it was like, yes, it's gone. It's out of here. And that was where it ended for me. And I didn't understand all the things that went into it for my dad of figuring, okay, where do we go? How heavy do we spread it? And those types of things. So getting a full analysis on whatever you're going to be spreading in your field is really, really important. And then rotating which ground you're putting it on to manage your entire farm the best you can. We'll talk about some of those strategies and take your questions here on today's program. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
No two seasons are the same, so you need your crops to rise ready for whatever's in store. Now, there's one simple decision that provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio offers protection against disease, insects, nematodes, and even moisture or nutrient stress. In the fight against the unpredictable, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at SoilWarrior.com.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today. It's Darren Hefty along with agronomist Rob Fritz. We're talking about manure management. Real happy to have Dan Anderson with us with Iowa State. Dan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Darren.
All right. I know we've talked to you a number of times, and manure is certainly a big issue. It's kind of a lightning rod in the state of Iowa because there's a lot of livestock, a very successful livestock industry, a lot of really good farmers in Iowa, but also a lot of people living in Iowa. So everybody kind of wants to know what's going on. What's happening right now in the state of Iowa when it comes to manure management?
Well, this fall was really a battle. I mean, the weather conditions were sort of an imperfect storm for us. Really wet for an extended period of the fall, making harvest a little slow and difficult. And ever since then, we've been battling some wet conditions and some frozen soil to try and get the manure out in the field.
So what's happening, you know, if you're a hog producer and you've got to get manure out, you just don't have much choice. You got to get it done. How do you do that, number one? And then number two, what about composting? With what types of manure is that an option?
Mm-hmm. So when we look about what our options are, for the most part, we've been trying to find the best days we can to get out in the field, hopefully find some days where the soil softened up a little bit and can still get those injectors into the ground. That's definitely what we prefer. The weather conditions we've had this year can't always do that. We've had some people switching to surface application. And when you do that with swine manure, you have to adjust your applications a little bit to account for ammonia volatilization to make sure we're still going to have sufficient N for that corn. And we've had some people making those changes. When it comes to composting, you really have to look to solid manure systems. So we have some cattle farms, both dairy and beef, as well as poultry facilities that do look into that, and there are some advantages to it. It's slowly becoming a little bit more popular within the state. They like the consistency of the product, less odor as we put it on, and it can help with some of the bacteria in there as well.
Yeah, a lot less pounds to haul out in the field, too. That's one thing that we've noticed, that it takes so much of the volume out, the composting process. Would you say 50% of the volume it takes out?
Depending on the manure type, but if you're starting with something with a lot of bedding in it, like cattle manure, definitely. If you're starting with something like layer manure, which we see a few people doing with, it's more like 15 to 20%, just because you don't have as much carbon there to break down to start with. But definitely for the cattle manure, 50% is a good number.
Yeah, it's been really interesting, and we've been expanding the use of compost on our farm. But there's a lot of different types of manure out there, and when it comes to poultry litter, that's another thing we've been experimenting with on our farm. What do we need to know about poultry litter?
Well, I think poultry litter is becoming more popular. We see a few people in Iowa purchasing it to try and help build some soil health. We've got some plots here near Ames that have been part of some research for 20 years. So we've been putting on various rates of poultry litter, and now we can definitely start to see and measure some of the differences actually in the amount of carbon in the soil and the active carbon in the soil. So really building up some of those soil health parameters. It works pretty nice for us. The one thing to watch out for is phosphorus buildup in your soil. Trying to be selective about how often you put it on, matching it with removal rates.
Yeah, that is the challenge with manure. It doesn't come in that nice little prescription that your fertilizer dealer has for you to fit everything just right. So how do you go about doing that? Is it varying rates or varying sources, or what's the best?
Oftentimes, what I tend to see people doing is varying sources. Working with swine manure some years and then poultry litter the next, or if you normally have commercial fertilizers in your rotation, looking to get some poultry litter in there 1 year and then looking for anhydrous ammonia the next.
There's
lots of ways to accomplish it, but that's what we tend to see in Iowa.
Yeah, it's a tricky little balance. And the other thing that that I was thinking about too, I wanted to make sure that I asked you before we moved on to something else, is what about with some of these applications that are going on in the surface? You had mentioned that before, and I wanted to get back to that. Do you use some sort of stabilizer to try and hold some of that nitrogen in place, or is there anything that we can add to the manure to help with that?
Well, you can try some stabilizers to help with ammonia volatilization. A urea inhibitor, a urease inhibitor can help a little bit. The one big advantage we have is it's been pretty cold. And normally when you think about ammonia loss, it tends to be a worse problem when the soils are a little bit warmer. So we are going to lose some nitrogen, but the nice cold temperatures are probably keeping ammonia volatilization down compared to where it would be if we were thinking maybe early fall and surface application.
Yeah, that's true. I guess the negative is you got soils that are freezing up, and the positive is, well, so is the manure. So that's not a bad situation either. Anything else, Dan, I guess that stands out to you as we talk about manure management?
I think that's sort of the big things that we see in Iowa, but a lot of people still seeing that advantage of manure, claiming that fertility and saving themselves on some fertilizer costs.
Yep, no doubt about that, which is a pretty important thing going into 2019 with the economic conditions where they are. Been talking with Dan Anderson at Iowa State. Dan, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
You know, Rob, Dan brought up a few good points there. And as you think about some of the liquid applications, this was a challenging year. Definitely not the norm. And I know some guys in our area have said, well, I need to get to this level in my pit and then I'm good. Then I can make it till spring and we can do some spring applications. So we'll probably see a lot more spring applications, at least around us.
Yeah, one of the things that I think we're going to want to really talk about in the next 3-4 months, I had a lot of guys that pulled their pits down partway, and then they still don't have enough room to, you know, make it a whole year. They're going to have to come back in the spring. You know, some of these pit products, we've been working pretty heavily with some for the last couple years. They could really do a lot of good through these winter months, where we can start actually trying to cycle some of that pit and start to get it mixing, even if you haven't done it before. And I think that's going to be a big deal, because when we come into spring, we don't want any difficulties pumping or any issues. We're going to be short on time. It's going to be a management practice. You know, you're going to want to make sure we're ahead of this, because we're planning to do it here ourselves. And we have a dairy lagoon that we're going to have to pump out this spring. It's going to have to come out. And it's going to barely make it through the winter, I think, to hold all of it in. And they're pretty sure it will. So we went with, well, we're going to do it in the spring. But the fact of the matter is, anything we can do to treat that pit to make it easier to pump in the spring is going to be a big deal. And then making sure we're ready to go. You know, who knows? We could have a nice spring and plenty early and get it done, but that's the part that's got me a little nervous, you know, because I don't have a lot of guys that were able to fully pump out. They were just pull in, pump down some so they got room and move on, because they're just running out of time.
Yeah, it was certainly a challenge. Now for the guys with dry manure, if it was just, well, let's just clean out the lot and pile it up at the end until we can get it spread, it's a little different situation. And in some of those areas, we're seeing guys saying, well, you know what? Hey, I got manure here. I couldn't get it out. How about we compost it? What do you think going into the winter? What are some things that farmers should be aware of if they're planning on composting?
Well, we've had some pretty good success with that. We've been using some biology to attack that pile. And it seems like the winter has been the best time. If we can get that manure above freezing, we can start from just over freezing, and we can get it to cook, over about a month, month and a half, and basically been able to compost that stuff through the winter, you know, in a nice big pile. So it's self insulating and allows that temperature to get up to about 150 degrees, even in the coldest days. So we're actually doing some of that right now on some guys where they couldn't make compost this summer because it was too wet. So one of the things that we learned this year was, and I guess we knew it, but never had seen it so bad, guys that were normally making compost, they couldn't even, you know, the normal way where you oxygenate the piles, couldn't even get it done because it kept raining and raining and raining. And the water just stops the decomposition process. I mean, it just stops it, and then we don't make compost. So that was a hard lesson learned. I guess it was kind of known, but it was the most problem we've had trying to make compost.
Too much water is a challenge. Too little carbon in the material seems right to be a little bit of a challenge too. I know Dan had mentioned, you know, depending on how much bedding and so forth there was, yes, in some of this manure, that you need a little bit of that in there to for the microbes to do their job.
Well, they
got to
have something to eat.
Yeah, they got to have some carbon to eat, and they got to have some nitrogen to process things, and then it all works out. And, you know, when you think about that with a lot of that composting, what we saw was water exiting the process, and you ended up with a lot more, as Dan mentioned, consistent product to work with, and less tonnage to have to haul out in the field, which is a big positive too. We'll talk more about compost and manure management on today's program. We're also going to get to some of your questions coming into the Ag PhD mailbag. If you have a question, you can send it in, radio@agphd.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy 2 Save 3 are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to growsmartrewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today, talking about manure management. We've been getting into compost a little bit. And one of the things, one of the strategies that we used on our farm this fall was putting out compost, and then where we were going to do some strip tillage, using that as our tillage. We didn't need to incorporate the compost like we would the manure, and we were using strip till to till some of that in a little bit. We got Dave Sender with us right now with Environmental Tillage Systems. Dave, what do you think of that strategy?
Sounds interesting. Actually, a lot of customers we work with have a lot of different approaches to manure management. So it definitely is not a one-size-fits-all approach, that's for sure.
No, there are a lot of different things going on, and boy, this fall was just no treat. It was no treat at all. Did you learn some lessons with wet conditions and just a mess?
Yeah, exactly. It was, I guess as we say, it was a very interesting fall. A lot of work didn't get done, but you know, there's so many different ways that guys are utilizing strip till in their manure management practices. And what's been interesting over the last couple of years is a lot of these operations are starting to shift to strip till that still have livestock. They're not necessarily trying to tailor their operation around the manure management any longer, which in the past had always seemed to be a really big driver when it came to manure management and how these operations were going to approach it. I've had more and more operations now say, hey, I'm going to actually tailor my operation around the strip till and see how I can make my manure management and manure incorporation work within my strip till operation. So there's been kind of a shift on how these operators are really starting to approach and manage their operations.
Yeah, there have been some big time advantages to reducing our tillage footprint on our farm. And I sure like doing as little tillage as need be, but doing some strip till has been really nice just to set that seed bed up. Unfortunately, this fall, we didn't get all our seed bed prep done. What changes are you recommending for springtime strip tillage?
You bet. So everybody I've been talking to has been in the same boat as you are. And there's a lot of work that's going to need to be done yet this spring. So more than anything, obviously the spring brings about its own set of challenges as well. And one thing that we can never control is weather. So we always have to be cognizant of that. And what's that spring going to bring? Is it going to be dry and wet or is it going to be wet? Is it going to be hot, cold, et cetera? But to be prepared to do that tillage, and one of the things with what we operate with the Soil Warrior, even though we do have both shank options and a coulter, or you could say non-shanked option, is a lot of guys now this spring, especially the guys that didn't get their fall acres done, are going to be going out with that coulter, take the shank off if they do have a shanked unit, and they're going to be hitting that ground this spring prior to plant. And depending on how they were able to do fall work, if any at all, in a lot of cases none, is going to dictate what they're going to need to do for their nutrients as well. So whether they're putting down a P and K or if they're just having to do some nitrogen, you know, what have you. But to prepare for that is to be opportunistic when the weather allows it. And with strip till, and especially guys that have been doing strip till for a little bit of time, there seems to be a little more flexibility as far as the way that soil reacts to that tillage. And it allows guys to get into the field. And this is something that we've heard over and over now for years, that the guys feel that they can get into these fields sooner than maybe some of their conventional counterparts when it comes to getting in that, doing that spring tillage. And that can make a world of difference. You know, again, we can't control what the weather does. And if there's rain on the way and we're able to get in and do some work, that can make a world of difference.
Yeah, and for the guys where maybe sunny days are on the way, if they can get in and fluff things up a little bit, it's not too long and they can get through there with a plant or two, and that's a really good thing. If you can get things to warm up, dry out just a little bit, and eventually get yourself in a planted situation, that's a pretty good deal. Talking with Dave Sender with Environmental Tillage Systems. Dave, I'm sure we'll be talking more going into the spring because we're already on plan B. Let's just hope we don't need plan C down the road too.
No question. Yeah, we'll keep our fingers crossed.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
We've got Zach with us. He farms in Iowa and does manure application as well. Zach, how are you doing today?
Hey, not too bad. How's it going today?
Good, good. We've been talking about all the challenges. It's funny. We planned a manure management show, and I talked to my sister, and she's oftentimes lining things up for us. And yep, we're going to do a manure management show in December and just talk about some of the good things and how things went, whatever. Well, in the meantime, we didn't get our manure applied. Or we got some, but not as much as we want. How things turn out in your area?
Yeah, we ended up getting ours applied, but I know the applicators had tough time, you know. Luckily, it got froze on them, but then we had a thaw, and it was really a race to kind of get things wrapped up. But yeah, we got everything luckily applied in a timely manner this fall. So,
yeah, there are definitely some long hours for a lot of the applicators this year, no doubt about that.
Around the clock, for sure.
So, what have you seen? I guess in your area, you get access to a lot of different types of manure. What main types of manure are you using?
Yeah, well, we have a hog confinement, so we have liquid hog manure. We also have a cattle deep pit, so liquid cattle manure. And then we also have solid cattle manure from the yards that we haul. So we actually work with a little bit of everything. The hog confinement, we do once a year in the fall, and the cattle confinement, that actually has to be done once in the spring and once in the fall, and then the solids is whenever you can get it hauled out, basically.
Yep, so. Yep. So you're trying to mix it up then? You go one shot of hog manure in certain pieces of ground, and the next time you're coming out with cattle, or how does that work for you?
Yeah, we found, I think the best thing to do is spread it out. But you don't want to get, I found out too, you know, with commodity prices and kind of crunching numbers, the farther you haul it, the more it costs to haul it. And
sure,
there's kind of a line where, okay, it's cheaper to do commercial fertilizer versus manure. And, but, you know, sometimes you have your ground build up, you don't have a choice. But yeah, we try to spread it out as much as possible and kind of build every acre up. And then we kind of like doing a three-pass nitrogen. That'd be our first. And then we do a broadcast. And then our final one is we come inside dress with Y drops. So,
yeah, what have you thought of the Y drop application? Has that worked out for your farm? Have you been able to get through fields at that time, or have you had some challenges getting it all done?
Yeah, we've been, we're very happy with it. I mean, we've thought, you know, when we first started doing this, we had some rainy summers that time of the year, and, you know, but really when it, even when it's close to Taslin, we've gone through it in Taslin and haven't had problems. So, I mean, but yeah, we've seen, I think it's, they always say the later the better, and that's the program we found out. I mean, there's some ground that can be a little challenging, hills, sure, and stuff. We've learned to manage that differently. We don't necessarily side dress them and stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, you just figure those things out over the years. And, you know, I was thinking, are you in a set rotation, or is it something where you do flex some acres from year to year?
We do flex. We're about 60-40 corn to soybeans, and do a little corn on corn each year. So it's rotated for the most part. You know, the stuff close, we plant a little more corn on corn versus things spread,
sure,
out.
Sure.
We rotate 50-50. So, and there's some alfalfa in that, some of that rotation too.
Yeah, we get a lot of questions going into next year, just with where prices are at and so forth. But with livestock, to diversify that operation as well, and like you mentioned, a hay crop too, you kind of have hedged your bets a little bit, so you're ready for whatever comes your way. Been talking with Zach down in Iowa. Zach, thank you so much. Really appreciate you sharing a little about what's going on in your farm.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Thank you. We're talking about manure management on our show today. We're also taking questions via email, radio@agphd.com. We're going to dig into the mailbag here a little bit later as well. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Are you frustrated with white mold showing up year after year in your soybeans? If you have tried fungicide applications and are still losing yield to white mold, now is the time to ask your seed dealer about Heads Up Plant Protectant. Heads Up is the first EPA-registered seed treatment for the prevention of white mold in soybeans and pulse crops. The first line of defense on your farm against white mold now starts with the right seed treatment package. Locate a Heads Up dealer near you by visiting headsupst.com today.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today we're talking manure and manure management on our show today, and also talking about compost a little bit. We've got Rob Fritz with us, and Rob is an agronomist. He works with a number of farmers that are composting, and certainly quite a few farmers that are using manure and trying to figure out the best way to do it. When you're looking at a return on investment approach, Rob, I love that just before the break we were talking to Zach, and he said he's got to manage the dollars and cents of this thing, and manure does provide a really good return on investment for farmers, and that's one of the reasons it's very popular.
Yeah, I remember, I don't know how many years ago now, but there was a time it was almost as if, you know, the guys were thinking manure really didn't have a lot of value and it was kind of a nuisance. And, you know, there was a lot of places giving it away because people didn't want it or wouldn't take it. And that, is, I guess, for the good of everyone, has really changed. And part of why it's changed is obviously an awareness of, yeah, there's NPK in there. And those things are manageable. They're measurable. You know, you did mention that we need to get a good sample of any manure applied. And that's one of the things that I guess that I've kind of seen slide and has cost guys money is, you know, they assume that that sample is going to be the same, exactly the same it's been for the last 20 years. But one of the things that's been happening, is basically the feed side of the industry has gotten really, really good at efficiency. And as that feed efficiency has gone up and we've had additives to our feed, the amount of basically product that's getting pushed through the system is going down. So the manure's concentration has changed over the last, well, even 5 years. But that's caught a few guys, you know, unaware. There's like, I put so many thousand gallons on of the hog manure every year, and it's just that. Well, they start looking at their soil tests, and they aren't as high as they thought they were. So that's one of the things, too, that I think as we've went from this manure as being just a byproduct and nobody really thought it had a lot of value to it's got a lot of value, but now we have to measure that value.
Yeah, I've got a friend that owns several hog confinement units, and that's one of the things that he's focused on too with the farmers that he's working with, is just figuring out what is the value now, because it's changing. It's different than what it once was, and using old numbers to pencil in just aren't the same because the manure nutrient content's different and the needs are different. So yeah, it's interesting with all these things to kind of put a pencil to them. And one thing Zach said too, he goes, you know, what we figured out is we can only haul the manure so far, and then all of a sudden you end up with all the trucking cost. And that is a lot of volume of product to move. That is one big disadvantage of manure, no question about that. And like for our farm, we don't have any livestock anymore, but we're purchasing manure and purchasing compost, and that definitely comes into play. It's how far can we move, how far can we justify that cost, depending on the price of commercial fertilizer as well.
Well, that's why this year we tried to bring in some poultry manure. Basically, it came down to, you know, the amount of NPK per ton is so much higher, you know, versus like a compost. So, you know, it was an economic decision to try to bring in poultry manure. And that's why I think it's got some commonality where a lot of guys, you can ship it farther and still make it make sense. Because, I mean, 4 tons of poultry manure brings a lot of NPK. And that is a real advantage there. I mean, the smell is a disadvantage.
Yeah, well, that's for sure. If you haven't been around poultry litter, if you aren't aware, if you have been around it, you would know.
You'll know.
it's pretty strong smelling. But you know, with a lot of this, and Dan Anderson with Iowa State was on, and he said there are some. Applicators putting some manure on the surface, and this is where we probably get phone calls as farmers is, hey, what are you doing over there? Because normally you work that manure right in, but it is a big difference. Right now, what Dan was talking about is, look, if it's below freezing and manure gets spread on a field, it's a whole different thing. It's going to freeze and you're done. But if you're putting it out there and it's 80 degrees outside, that's kind of irresponsible. And what Dan was said, they're picking and choosing days to try to just to try to get pits down enough that the growers can make it until spring, and it ends up being an okay deal. It sounds worse than it ends up being, but if they find some days and they can get the top few inches to loosen up, they can till stuff under, and you never know the difference.
My experience, the first experience I had with poultry litter was actually just this year, and the first day we brought it in, I actually didn't think it was quite as smelly as it was, but we had to go set the depth of the tillage tool, and I was out walking across it, and it stuck with me for a few days. I mean, it was on pretty much everything that I had on that. So I learned, the guys who were delivering it told me that I'd respect it if I just got around it, and they were right. But you know, the thing about it was is
that I love that you're learning those lessons for all of us, Rob. That's really helpful.
Well, it's not that I wanted to learn that lesson, but I didn't respect the potentness of it. But I will say this, they brought in a spreader, and the technology and the equipment that is available now has really improved, like, the spreading, the quality of the spread. You know, one of the big problems that a lot of guys have had in the past, and this is, you know, we talked I was on a program earlier a couple days ago, and we had talked about, is your equipment up to, you know, snuff for the next spring? Well, this is one of the deals where this isn't the old spreader these guys are using like we used when I was a kid, even. I mean, the technology on this equipment is so good, and the spread patterns are fantastic on some of these vertical beater spreaders on these dries. That whole missing and getting bad spots, things like that, it's going to be much better today than it's ever been. And that's a big deal, because one of the things that when I was growing up was, hey, you know, it's so uneven, you can never get it where you want to be, and then you have these bad spots in the fields.
Yes.
That's they've really come a long ways in that.
You know, the other thing, Rob, is just the predictability of manure. How much is going to be available year one? I think we've got a fairly good handle on how much is available year one, but we know there's going to be some benefit. We know there's some manure that's not necessarily in an immediately available form, and it's going to come out next year. And I think for most growers, they're utilizing that as, hey, it's luxury feeding. If it's there, it's there, but I'm not going to count on this huge volume of fertility out of it. And if you take that approach, I think you're better off. And then back to your evenness of spreading, ideally, we would spread one way, say east and west, and then we'd come back and spread the other half of the manure north and south, but that isn't going to happen. You don't want to track up your field that way and have all that compaction. So people are just going one direction and spreading. and you're going to have a little bit of unevenness, and that's where some commercial fertilizer can come into. If you're using manure as part of your fertility source and not your entire program, you leave a little bit of room to put some commercial fertilizer out there to kind of even those things out. Any other comments along that, Rob, with just getting the manure applied?
Well, I just, like I said, I've been amazed at that technologically advanced, you know, they're just even using GPS for swath control, things like that, and storing it in so you can plug it into your SMS programs or things like that, so you know where they've been, how much they've applied. They even have tonnage reports, so you know what's coming out the machine, or at least the settings it's on. It's pretty nice things to have. I agree with it, though, or with what you said, if mainly nitrogen is what we're talking about there, but you know, making sure you have enough there to hold up those spots that aren't always going to be perfect on that spread pattern.
Yeah, I've been talking a lot about manure and compost on today's program, and we can absolutely talk for hours about that. There's so much that we could get into, but hopefully on your farm you were in a good spot this year, got the manure out that you needed to get out. If not, springtime is coming, and you have to be set up and prepared that you don't have any hiccups, because it looks like spring could be a little bit of a rush this year with all the work that many farmers, including us, wanted to get done this fall and just couldn't get done due to some weather constraints. We're going to dig into the Ag PhD mailbag coming up right after this. If you've got a question, you can email us, radio@agphd.com. Stay tuned.
Tired of having to babysit your grain bins, waiting to manually turn on fans until the weather's just right? Have you ever kicked yourself for losing an opportunity to better manage your stored grain? Operating the fans on your bins just got a lot easier with the Steps GMS app. The Steps GMS temperature humidity switch is a low-cost solution that allows you to operate bin fans according to your specifications. For more information, find us on Twitter at StepsGMS or visit us at StepsGMS.com.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free GrainBridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at GrainPhD.com.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season. To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contan's WG soil fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contan's this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Go to whitemoldcontrol.com to learn more about the Contan's no-risk guarantee. Start a Contan's white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? The Soil Warrior can reduce trips across the field, optimize nutrient placement, and improve soil health. So you can lower production costs without losing yield. See what makes the Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
The Guardian Air Twin Spray Nozzle from HyPro produces a twin spray pattern with air-inducted droplets for superior coverage, even in dense canopies. Be effective and efficient with your spray application this season with the Guardian Air Twin. HyPro, helping you spray better.
Hey everybody, come on in. The Ag PhD mailbag is about to begin.
back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We've got agronomist Rob Fritz in, and wouldn't you know it, we got a couple questions specifically for Rob. One came in. It said, Brian and Darren were talking about how a farmer you were working with set a state yield record on soybeans this year. I want to ask Rob if they had used manure on that field in previous history, and if not, how did they fertilize to get over 100 bushel soybeans? They want your secrets, Rob.
Well, first and foremost, and I've had this question, everybody's like, well, what's the one thing that did it? Nope, not one thing. In fact, it was a whole bunch of stuff. One, we had a great year that obviously helped us out. It was like it was irrigated. I give some credit to that. But I will say this, historical, lots of corn in the past history. You know, he was a corn on corn kind of guy for a long time. And has a lot of cattle, so he was running a feedlot. But we run right now on a two-year corn and then a bean rotation, which I think reduces the disease portfolio that we have to fight and also gives us more carbon to feed the plant. And then we do get on about a four-year rotation. There is some manure spread. The big thing is, can we do really well next year? That's our target, because we have to move fields every year. You know, that's one advantage these high-yield corn guys have. You could do corn on corn, and that's really not something we're going to want to do is beans on beans. So every year we're moving our plot to different fields where we're trying to set this yield. And that is going to be my biggest challenge for, you know, to put together a program that we can move from field to field and have success.
Yep, that'll be fun. Thanks for that question, by the way. That's always fun to talk about. Okay, Rob, had another one for you. Hey, you got Rob on the show again today. I love to hear when Rob's on there. He had talked before about a product called Decomp. Is that what he was talking about with the compost today? I'm wondering, in my situation, I didn't do fall tillage. Would something like that help me break my residue down? And could I potentially use it in furrow if I didn't broadcast it?
Well, officially, we're going to launch. I'll start at the end first. We're going to launch a awareness campaign that Decomp can go in furrow. Did a bunch of testing this year with Glenn. Lots of different plots, lots of different farms, lots of different styles of planting, no-till, strip-till, conventional till, and we had a nice return on that product in the furrow. We did have some fear on the front side to make sure that it was okay, and we tested it, you know, like I said, different ways, different mixes. It worked great. The big thing about that product is it's designed for anaerobic breakdown of organic matter into usable form for the plant. So really what we're looking at is that residue you're tilling into the soil, that residue laying on the surface, we're just going to place a high dose of microbes and some other stuff that we may want in furrow is in the mix. So we have some basically some carbon-based products in there that also boost the bugs that are going in the container, keep them alive. But on the plus side, they hit the soil and they can be used to supplement soil microbial life beyond what we're putting in the container. And then, it's just been a nice combo, has a multiple use now. And then I do get pretty excited about the fact that we can do some stuff in the winter with that product on these piles, and we can treat it as guys are pushing out of their barns, and we can start putting that product in there, and it'll start that microbial breakdown anaerobically, which is a big difference than aerobically, where you have to keep turning the piles. And multiple places last winter, tremendous success. So we've been real pleased with the product.
What did you think about the spraying it over the top for residue breakdown? Because I know I've come across some of your trial strips out in fields, and mm-hmm. I see white residue out there breaking down.
Right. Well, the white is actually some of the
fungi.
Really going to talk about what we have there for our mode of action. But it is a kind of rather unique one, and we're pretty excited about it. Now, we don't know what all's causing that. Sometimes I think we're turning on a natural reaction with what we're doing. And in fact, I know in some places we haven't applied it that year, but we're getting those microbial mats to show up, and it's a pretty big deal. But yeah, it's been a surprise. I think that as guys go forward, though, that they're going to like the in-furrow option to inoculate the soil. You know, making another pass for a lot of guys is time-consuming, and that's why we started looking at, hey, can we inoculate the soil at planting time and start putting some of these extra microbes out so that guys, you know, in the fall when they're busy harvesting, they don't, there's nobody getting that done, you know, getting that spraying out and trying to attack those residues. So let's look at different ways to cycle in those residues.
All right, get a question. This one's from Don. He said, I watched on one of your TV shows but didn't have a chance to write down the brand name of the insecticide that you were getting some activity on spider mites in corn and soybeans with. Well, generally we'd be using bifenthrin, which would be a brand name, Brigade or Capture. Bifenthrin would be the active ingredient in those products. And we get decent activity on spider mites in corn and beans in the northern Midwest. Lorsban would be another insecticide that you could potentially get some spider mite activity on. But here's the thing. In some parts of the country, they've got resistance to both of those insecticides trying to kill spider mites. So they would actually use a miticide like Zeal. Or Onager. Or
right.
There's a number of different products. But in terms of the insecticide we talked about on the show, it was likely bifenthrin, which again is the active in either Brigade or Capture. Thanks for the question, Don. We appreciate that. Got one from Travis, and he said, I'm a food plot guy, and I'm wondering if you think it'd be okay to spray dicamba over established clover and cereal rye the last few days of April. I have a lot of broadleaf plants for weeds in the field. You know, dicamba definitely will kill some broadleaf plants. It does need to be warm to get that to work. And Rob, you're kind of wincing just a little bit about dicamba in the spring. What's your experience?
Well, I think, you know, as far as the cereal rye goes, I don't have any problems with that. But, yeah, I've been bit by the dicamba early spring bug a few times where we've went out when it was too cold and we just didn't kill anything. So and even 2,4-D feels the same. I mean, it could happen to both. And
all right, one thing I wasn't clear about here in Travis's question, too, do you want to kill the cereal rye? Because if you did, dicamba's not going to do that. It's
no,
only going to kill the broadleaf.
It won't touch that.
If you wanted to leave the cereal rye, then so be it. But I was curious about that, too, of I guess if only the clovers left and the cereal rye died in the winter, then, oh, okay. So if you just had broadleaves to go after. But I just rarely find that to be the case, that we only have broadleaves. It seems like we're oftentimes throwing in a Roundup or something to try and at least clean up the grass. What do you think about that? If you're throwing some Roundup in to clean up the grass as well, do you need more than a pint in the spring, or do you need to up it a little bit because temperatures may be not ideal?
Oh, I would say you're definitely going to want more than a pint. You know, you mean you're talking the Roundup side?
Yes,
oh, yeah, Roundup. Yeah. No, I would say quart minimum. And as far as if you're trying to wipe out everything, then you might want to make a combination play there with the dicamba and the Roundup. My assumption was he was going to try to sneak out early and catch the other stuff before it's coming out of dormancy and still kill the broadleaves that are out there that are weeds, then I don't like any part of that.
Yeah, that's true. If you have established clover and you don't want to kill it,
that's a bad plan.
It's not going to work. It's just not going to work.
That's how I get rid of clover in my lawn.
Yes.
It's dicamba because it's really what works really well on clover.
Yeah, so in clover, we don't have much for choices. You could likely spray Buck-Tro without completely wiping it out. Which is going to get quite a few of those weeds, although if they're really big or if they're perennials, you're not going to get them. But it would get quite a few of those annuals that are just getting started in the spring, so that might be something to take a look at.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's going to be tough. Dicamba's going to have a little bit of residual. It's going to stick around, and chances are you're going to, if not completely kill the clover, you're going to damage it pretty badly. Thanks for the question, though. We really appreciate that, Travis. If you have a question for us, please send it in or give us a call. We've got our phone lines open most days when we're doing the show, taking calls, and we always have our email box open, radio@agphd.com. I want to say thanks to our production staff. Thanks to our guests and everybody who called or wrote in with questions on today's program. And thanks to you for listening. And be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now, stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.